It's time to play with the phones, unless you're driving, of course, as I welcome gadget guru Pete Sipple into the studio. Long time no see.
Indeed. Good afternoon.
Now, we've been umming and ahhing for a couple of weeks about what we can do as a follow-up, because you've been in before talking about internet security and Wi-Fi and keeping the kids off Instagram and Facebook and things like that. The car dongle that you plug in to get the revs and the engine condition, things like that. And we decided that apps would be a good thing, because you're an iPhone man. And I'm an Android man, so
no fighting.
Yeah, I'm guessing there's going to be some overlap, but maybe there's going to be some exclusive Apple apps, and maybe there's a couple on my phone that you've not got or even heard of. But most of the time, these apps make our life easier. So the other day I had to go and park, and the machine I'm used to, it's changed in the last couple of weeks. It's really annoying. Usually, it's a case of fishing in the center console for a couple of quid in change, and then popping in the coins and pressing the green button and getting a ticket. Now they've got keyboards on them and contactless chip and pin what's it doodahs. I've got to tell it my registration number, so you can't give the ticket as you're going out to somebody else, which I can partly understand. But now you've got to go through this whole different payment system. But you can pay on your phone, can't you? How easy is that?
You can, and irritatingly, each car park seems to have a different set of apps. So I've got four car parking apps, depending on which council's car park I'm using at any one time.
Right.
So a little bit tedious.
So it's not like, you know, an NCP car park will do like one size fits all. You have to have all these different apps.
So looking on my phone, I've got Ringo, which does one of them, one called Pay by Phone, which is the C2C one, and then Mobon is a new one that seems to have appeared. And you have to set up your credit card details with all of them and remember which one you're at. And then, of course, get there, look for the parking number, put in the five-digit number, then you'll register. Oh, it's very tedious, but
Is it cheaper using the app?
It used to be slightly more expensive. You'd pay a booking fee, 20p or something for it. It's not radically more expensive now. And what you're finding is a lot of the councils are removing the coin-driven stuff and moving over to this. Because of that, they are now dropping the booking surcharge, which helps.
Is it any more or less reliable than having a ticket on your windscreen? Because I don't trust the man or woman who's going around with that machine and they've got their hat on. They look very official and they're looking at all the cars. I don't trust that they're going to get that message that say Charlie paid for his parking online and doesn't have a little ticket on his dashboard somewhere.
Yeah, I've got very, very cautious about all sorts of things to do with parking now. So what I'll typically do is I'll take a picture of me at the parking machine or my car parked with a timestamp on it just as a backup.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe it. I've only ever had one incident where things have gone wrong.
Yeah.
I was in the right. I did have some photos. I did appeal it and I won. So I think as long as you've got the evidence, which normally with one of these online smartphone things, you get a receipt either by text message or in the app. So you are covered that you've definitely paid.
And petrol is a very important thing. When you're filling up, you want to look for the... you don't just go to the... well, actually, I do. I generally go to my local one because it's easiest to get to. The others are all on the wrong side of the road.
Well, there's a couple of apps that I really rate when it comes to driving. So one is something called Petrol Prices, which is a free app. Works on your one, the Android, the iPhone. Totally free. And you can either find your nearest petrol station or you can find the cheapest petrol station. And it's all crowdsourced data. So as people go to fill up, they take a look at the current price, log it in the app. So you're seeing users' feedback and users' data on current prices. I'm looking at mine now. I can look at petrol stations within a 10-mile radius. I'm seeing quite a price difference here. So there's a very cheap place about 6 miles away from where we're sitting at the moment. 124.7 pence per litre. Or if you go to one of the more expensive ones on one of the main roads in this neck of the woods, we're talking 132.
This is obviously because we're very, very close to the M25,
exactly.
So that the prices are very... And you can tell we're doing this live because in the background you can hear Pete's phone going...
Yes, apologies.
I should have given you the Wi-Fi code and you can do it as much as you like without the... is the 4G all right here? Because that does get a bit iffy at times.
Not so good, to
be honest. Struggle, I'll give you the Wi-Fi password in a second.
I'll move it away, it'll be fine. It's live radio, isn't it?
Of course, yeah. Now, I think you've got this app on your phone, the Costa app. Just to pick one at random, of course. I'm just going through my I've got a second screen on my phone that's just like guff of, you know, just random stuff. Going slightly geeky for a second, I've got SkyMap, which is quite good. You turn your GPS on, I'll tell it which city you're in, and it uses the, is it the accelerometer? So if you point it up at the sky, you get a lovely, pretty sort of network of stars, and you can say, ah, that's Pluto over there, or that's where the moon should be, things like that.
That's very good. There is one called Flight Radar, which lets you track aircraft. So if you see a noisy plane going overhead, again, the same sort of thing, augmented reality, point up at the sky, you can see what the plane is, where it's going, where it's been, how fast it's going, how high it's flying, that sort of thing. So they're quite clever, those sort of things.
That's being used everywhere now. I think whenever you see something on the news with an incident involving a plane, you usually get a screen grab of one of the plane tracking websites, because you can get quite a lot from a plane. It's not secret how high it is, where it's going. Obviously, the fact that you might be able to see it from the naked eye on the ground in the sky, but it is actually sending out data that can be, I suppose, received or intercepted by Joe Blogs.
Mm-hmm. It's quite handy for two reasons. One, you can just see who's buzzing you in the back garden if there's a plane going overhead. But if you're picking up a relative from an airport, you can see if the flight's on time. I find it very useful. I live near an airport. If I'm picking somebody up, it's about £5 to park. So if I know exactly the time the flight's coming in, I can kind of hover and pick them up without having to pay to park. So they can be quite handy,
you're
that sort of thing.
Very well organised, you are. I was going to ask about the data, because that's a big thing at the moment. Now, you're saying you're giving these apps your credit card details and they've got access to your payment system. Has there ever been any problems with that? Because you've got, say, four or five parking apps. You've got an app that tracks what you've been shopping, whether it's reward points or coffee points, etc. You've got the App Store or the Play Store that can charge you for an app if the app costs 99p or £3.99. What are the pitfalls there? Have you ever had any problems?
I used to be very, very cautious of anything, and I effectively had two credit cards. One was an internet credit card and one was an everything else credit card, because I didn't trust the internet. We're now talking 10 years or so ago. These days, I've not had a problem, touch wood, in the last 10 years. Now, for convenience, I use one credit card. I just trust it, because generally things are so well encrypted. My phone requires a thumbprint to get into it. There are passwords on all of these apps anyway. If I do lose my phone or my credit card, it's actually fairly easy to disassociate it with things now. So I don't worry. People do. And again, you can be as careful as you want. Separate credit card is definitely the way to go. Complex passwords, of course, just to make sure, you know, if someone does get into one of your accounts, they then don't get all the rest of your details. So, yeah, a little bit of care if you are cautious.
Have you found the fingerprint thing on the phone to be reliable? Because mine doesn't always work. So you can obviously set a PIN code, or you can draw a pattern, a custom pattern to you. Obviously, something on the front screen, a lock screen, is advisable, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And it takes me on to another app that I'd like to mention, which is one called eWallet. There's a few of these out there, but basically they track your passwords. So if you're anything like me, I've got about 100 passwords. You know, Facebook has got one, Twitter, anything I shop online, they've all got different passwords. I can't remember them all. So I have one app that stores all those passwords in there. And I have one master password to get me into that. And it needs my thumbprint to get me to the screen that asks me for the password.
It's a lot of layers of security.
It is. And I feel kind of good about that. I've also got a four-digit code on the lock screen, as you say. So there's an amount of security there. But
it opens up the possibility of if this one app has all of your passwords in it, how secure is that? Because once you're into that, by, you know, fair means or foul, they've pretty much got everything. And passwords these days, they always say you've got to have a capital letter, you've got to have a number, you've got to have a special symbol. So should passwords be easy to remember, like the name of your pet or your first crush or the road you lived in when you were five? Or should it be a load of random letters and numbers with symbols in strange places?
Again, it depends how cautious you are about security. So for me, I've developed a trick over the years that I've got the first four letters are common. So most of my passwords have those four. Then I've got a symbol that's common. And then I use two letters to indicate what it is, whether it's shopping, whether it's social media, and then a number at the end of it. So I can kind of roughly guess what the password's going to be. It's a bit messy. It kind of works for me. It's evolved over time. But yes, for certainly things like banking, then you should be very secure. You are looking at uppercase, lowercase, and characters. If it's something to, I don't know, protect your Facebook account or your online shopping account, really, who's going to be that interested in caring? And maybe just a short password, but with something to make it non-obvious, as long as it's not in a dictionary.
Because that's how they get into these things, isn't it? They do what's called a dictionary attack, where they just throw all the words in the English language at it and hope that, hamster 123 is like the password.
How did you know my password was hamster 123?
And the other thing is, when you get to that I've forgotten my password option, you usually get a couple of like security questions, and it asks you silly things like, what's your mother's maiden name? And I suppose if anybody who remotely knows you may know something like that, or know the name of your first pet.
Well, here's a big flaw. A lot of people these days have started putting their family trees online. So you use one of these services, there's Ancestry, there's Find My Relatives, whatever. And to make that work, you've got to publish your family tree, which of course includes your date of birth and your mother's maiden name and your place of birth.
And it's all there.
And it's all there. So some people are very, very unaware of some of these dangers. They'll put things up on Facebook. They might put up, I'm on holiday next week. Click here for my family tree. So you know the house is empty. You know they're out of the country. And mother's maiden name, date of birth, first address, all that sort of stuff, which are the common security questions.
Now, you being an iPhone man and me being an Android, I've got a Samsung here. I've been through a few of these, and I quite like the whole idea of Android, but you've had an iPhone for as long as I can remember. If you had to choose, would you still be an iPhone man next time you upgrade, or would you change over? Can you see benefits in either or? Is it a case of you've been tied into the iPhone ethos and you've got this whole sync thing going on? Because a few people here have got iPhones, are always saying to me, I can't get my pictures to sync back home. And I just plug my USB lead into the bottom of my Samsung Android phone, and up pops a little notification on my computer saying, you've plugged a removable drive, and it's just like plugging in a USB stick, and it's there as F or G drive or something. I can just drag and drop. But with iPhone, it's a lot trickier, isn't it?
I'm really, really torn. See, I'm a techie at heart, and the techie in me says Android is the way to go because of exactly that reason. It's open source, you can plug it in, you can download your files. Android phones tend to be slightly more advanced than the iPhone. They get the features earlier because they're not in this whole Apple cycle of releasing products. So I should be an Android user, but there's just something about the iPhone that works for me. The apps just work. It syncs beautifully with my music collection at home. I've had an iPhone since they first came out. I've had Androids as well at the same time, but I always come back to the simplicity and the ease and the elegance of the iPhone. So I am really torn. It's a tricky one.
I suppose you know where you are with an iPhone because they've all got the same spec, that particular model, whereas with an Android phone, you're torn between four or five different developers, manufacturers, Samsung, LG, etc., HTC. And then you have to look at, well, what's the megapixel on the camera? Is it 10? Is it 13? Is it 15? How much RAM has it got? How much storage space has it got? Can I put a micro SD card in there? Whereas with the iPhone, it's like iPhone 7, bosh, done. Mm,
exactly. And as you've said earlier, I am sort of tied into the whole the platform. So I have an iPad, I use iTunes at home. You'll see I'm wearing an iWatch.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got all the kit linked together. And if I were to lose the phone, then stuff at home doesn't work. I've got an Apple TV box at home, that stops working. The watch doesn't work. So they've kind of got me, unfortunately.
Okay, what we're going to do, I think, for the write-up on the website is we're going to have this again as a listen again piece. You can listen back to this to your heart's content. But what I'll do is I'll get maybe top five apps from you, and with links to those online, and people listening can actually go and give them a try. Pete Sipple, thank you very much for coming in again. We're sort of brainstorming about what we're going to do next, but it's probably going to be something maybe security related. We're looking at funny emails you get, funny phone calls from people who claim to be someone they're not, and what do you say when they ask for something like your inside leg measurement or something, and do you tell them or do you... It's a funny world when you get things like that. What do you do?
It is very difficult. Maybe there's a feature in there somewhere.
Okay. So, Pete Sipple, gadget guru and all-round iPhone extraordinaire. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
A pleasure.